Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Osiris. Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, she made me feel like a god. That's when it got wheels off. Clay Ross is from South Carolina. He lives in Brooklyn, New York now. He won some Grammys with his band Ranky Tanky and has a new record just out with his band American Patchwork Quartet. He is an incredible musician, which always makes me nervous. He studied really hard and got really good at his instrument. And that's pretty impressive. And he's also a really sweet guy. His new band is put together so thoughtfully and with such intention. The new record is great. And I really have enjoyed getting to talk to him. He's a really hardworking musician, you know, and he's won some awards and done some incredible stuff and worked with some incredible people, but it's still, you know, he's a working musician. You know, we talk a lot about that. He's working hard. He's hustling day after day, week after week, month after month. Clay Ross, his new band, American Patchwork Quartet, is very much a band of a lot of different people from a lot of different places and cultures. And it actually would have been great if I had the kind of podcast set up where I could talk to everybody, but I got to talk to him, and I'm really glad that I did, because I feel like there's a lot of wisdom here. Clay shared a lot of insight into his process and his story, and I'm really excited for y'all to hear this, and I'm really excited to hopefully introduce some people to the music of American Patchwork Quartet. So please welcome to Wheels Off the great Clay Ross. Welcome to Wheels Off, Clay Ross. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm good, Rhett. Thanks so much for having me, man. Nice to be here.
For the edification of our listeners, from where are you logging in?
So I'm currently in my apartment in Brooklyn, New York. So I'm kind of off the F train, off the Fort Hamilton stop, for those of you who know Brooklyn.
I mean, from what I can see of our connection here, it looks like a nice, big, airy space with lots of light.
Man, it is. I love my apartment. I got lucky. I got into my apartment almost 20 years ago, and I'm not going anywhere.
Nice.
They can't get rid of me. So, yeah, Brooklyn's a tough place, you know, to sort of find room to live. But yeah, sometimes artists get lucky and find the right spot. So hey, this neighborhood just kind of transformed around me. It was not cool when I came here. All my friends lived in Williamsburg, and they're like, "What are you doing all the way out there?" But definitely grew into it.
It's so funny. So you saw it and you had an instinct about it, and you thought it would be a good place, and it wound up coming true.
Yeah, yeah, and it was actually like when my wife and I, we've been together for, you know, 25 years almost now. And we came here together from South Carolina. And when we came, we were just looking around at apartments, but this was the first building that we even came to. And we came from South Carolina and stayed with a friend who was a violinist who lived here from South Carolina. And she was renting an apartment here. And we were based at her in this building looking for other apartments. And we looked everywhere, and everything we looked at, we were just like, so we were just like, oh man, this is awful. This is just the most disheartening search we've ever been on. And we came back to our apartment. We were like, it's just, we just want to find something like this. Like, we love it here. And she's like, I'm leaving. You should take over my lease.
That's amazing. Like,
yeah, we should. So anyway, that all worked out.
I wonder if there's some lesson just in terms of being a creative type person in that, like being, you know, because we rely so much on our instincts and our intuition, and also the universe is frequently just handing us things, and whether or not we're open to noticing that or accepting that.
Man, that's a good one. I think about that a lot. You know, there's actually a tie-in to our current project, the American Patchwork Quartet, and how that even came to existence, and just sort of being, having your eyes open when things don't work out, and the story about looking for an apartment, like nothing worked out. So it brought us back to where we actually were, which was the perfect place. And I met our drummer, Clarence Penn, who is a big part of the American Patchwork Quartet record. He and I were coming back from the Monterey Jazz Festival where I was playing for the first time. Clarence to me was like this big drum star that I was like nervous to meet, you know, because he's played with all the jazz legends like Michael Brecker and Betty Carter. And I've just admired his work for a long time. But then we were on this traveling back to New York, and we ended up on a airplane. We ended up in the airport together on a 10-hour like plane debacle where like the travel was just completely messed up. But in that time, we really had an opportunity to get to know each other, which was cool. So yeah, it's like the universe kind of saying like, your plans are messed up, but you know, this is an opportunity.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about next, was the American Patchwork Quartet and how that came to be and what it's all about.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're out here talking about these days and right now, and the record's coming out. I don't know when this will air, but our album's coming out on February 9th, 2024.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And it's just a, you know, it's been this labor of love for the past 4 years that we've worked on this project. And, you know, it really kind of started with a friendship that I made. I've been in New York for like 20 years now. And, you know, one of the big breaks that I've caught here is just like had this opportunity to be a teaching artist at Carnegie Hall. And, you know, that's cool because it's like Carnegie Hall, you know, it's like this famous place. And the best part about that is the artists that I met. Like, I met so many cool artists and people from all over the world that are also teaching artists there, and really connected with a woman named Falu. And Falu is just this incredible singer with a Hindustani classical training from India. And we were working real close together, and we just decided, like, you know, we got to figure out a way to make music together. And meanwhile, I was doing a project called Rinky Tanky, which has been, you know, the most successful project I've ever been a part of, that, you know, has won 2 Grammy Awards. And, you know, it was like a big breakthrough for me. But I started that group too, like just being really interested in the root, my Carolina roots. Yeah. And digging into all these field recordings. And while I was studying all the field recordings, I found all this music that didn't fit with Rinky Tanky, but that I really loved, you know, all these Appalachian ballads and Mississippi fife and drum music grooves. And so I started to share this music with Falu, and I said, what do you think about singing this? Like, how can you connect with this? Does this melody resonate with you at all? And she's like, oh my God. And she heard like Shenandoah, and she heard Pretty Sarah, and she just thought, oh my God, this is beautiful. Yeah, I can sing this. And so we started to do those songs, and then just the idea of, like, you know, at that time, especially, and still, I mean, you know, immigration is such this big topic in our time. And we just thought, like, we could tell a story through these songs about American diversity and bring representation to stages and you know, we're performers, this is what we do, and we have an opportunity because we know each other, and we have a network. We're here in New York in the sort of the most diverse area code on the planet, you know, like let's create a group that with that in mind and use these songs as like the platform to explore music together. Because at the end of the day, whether, you know, my ancestors have been here for 400 years or, and you just came literally, you know, 10 years ago to the US, like we're both Americans and we're both US citizens. So we both have whatever, a right in a way, or just we have permission, you know, to explore this music as Americans. So that's what we've been doing. And it's really cool because it's come a long way, because then we, you know, we had an opportunity to record and then we went to record in Asheville, North Carolina, kind of near where I'm from, like drinking from the well, like in the source of where this music was sort of nurtured. And man, it was just so special. Like when I hear that, when I was in the session, when we were making this record, it was like, it just felt like something really unique. Like, no, like who else would do this? And then it felt like I felt grateful because it felt like very personal to me, because it was like merging up these two worlds, like my birthplace, my Carolina home, and my new life in New York City, and all the people that make that life special in New York City. And that's really about diversity and global culture, and merging that into this like art, that it just felt very personal and special. And I'm so excited to share it with the world. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share it here, Rhett. Thanks, man.
Oh man, it's so cool. It's so great to hear about it. Yeah, it's such a perfect moment for it right now. It probably always is, you know, there's always some sort of xenophobia or fear of others or fear of outsiders, but it does seem like right now at this moment, maybe for me personally, just because I was at an apartment last night of an older relative listening to them yell about immigration for a long time. And I'm just thinking like, what are you doing, man? Calm down. This is a giant country and there's room for a lot of people in it.
It is wild, man. I mean, and you know, we try to be real positive with our messaging, or, you know, when we go out and talk about it, and we've been lucky to, because, you know, the people involved in the project are really accomplished and well-known. I mean, Falu, like literally, you know, she was at the Grammys last night, nominated for best world music, global music performance. And, you know, yeah, she's, and Clarence and Yasushi are, you know, they work with the most renowned jazz artists working today. And so I'm grateful that everybody in the group liked the idea, but the project has weight because they're involved. And yeah, you know, we really just want to be able to go out there and say, look, like our diversity is our greatest asset. I mean, it's the thing that makes our country cool, you know? I mean, it's one of the things that makes our country just a really a wonderful place. And, that we have all this opportunity to dig into these cultures together and to learn from one another, and to create something new. And that's always what we've done. That's what we've always done. And as that's kind of what America is all about, right?
Well, it's funny because at the heart of probably a lot of different disciplines of art, but specifically music, there's so much collaboration, and it's part of what always drew me to it. And whenever I talk to people, you know, in the real world and on these Wheels Off talks, you know, it's collaboration is such a big part of what makes us love our job. And what you're doing is such a sort of proof of concept. Like, you know, we don't need to be scared of anybody. We need to all just pull together. And then when you do, you make something so beautiful, like what you guys are doing.
Man. Yeah. That's well said. That's exactly the goal. Yeah. That's what we set out to accomplish. And I feel like I'm just real proud of the sound of the project. I mean, I think even without we didn't come into this like trying to make a political statement, you know, really, although it can be politicized, obviously, and it is, this issue in general is politicized, but you know, we wanted to just make a beautiful piece of work. And I think we really did that. I'm really proud of it. Like, I love the way it sounds. We work with a engineer named Shawnee Gandy, who herself, you know, is a new American. You know, she was in Australia. She's from Australia. And yeah, but her parents are from Asia. And she has a very interesting, you know, diverse background and a very interesting American story as well. But she's a brilliant recording engineer and working in Nashville and, you know, has won Grammy Awards for her work with people like Sarah Jarosz and working in Americana music. So it's interesting, you know, just all these, just all the kind of cliches that people have and just kind of putting, confronting them and putting them right in people's face in a way and without being confrontational, just saying like, well, you know, there's all this going on, you know, there's all of this, there's all these people, that want to participate in this conversation and,
yeah,
and they have something really cool to offer to the conversation, you know?
It's funny how sometimes the things that wind up making sort of the most effective political statements are the things that are not at all political. Like what you're right. doing is yeah. you're just making art. You're just friends who are great at music doing music, but it winds up being such an effective statement. It's really beautiful. Well done.
Well, yeah, thanks, Rhett. You know, and we'll see. I mean, I think if we can be a small part of, opening people's hearts and, you know, I mean, I'll tell a little story that I think is cool that meant something to me, you know, cause like, I'm the same as you, man. I'm, you know, like I have the whole, you know, the older uncles or whatever that, you know, that, you know, growing up, they might've been just go on their rants, you know, about this or that. And you don't agree with that or you want to kind of share a different perspective. And, yeah, man, I mean, I've been bringing this project into the South, man, like to the deep South. Like we played in, we did a whole tour where we were in North Carolina, South Carolina. We played in, Philadelphia, Mississippi at Marty Stewart's Congress of Country Music.
Wow.
Like that was unreal, you know,
wow.
with this band and people loved it. Like they loved it. It was really transformative, you know? But when we played in my hometown in Greenville, South Carolina, like I grew up in Anderson, but Greenville is like the big town, you know, next to us, 45 minutes away, man, all the family came, all the extended family came and they liked it. You know what I mean? So I don't know how, if it got under their skin deeply, but I'm sure it made them think a little, you know, I'm grateful for that, you know? And I'm just, and at the end of the day, like it's something that I'm just feel real, real lucky just to even have the opportunity to go out and share this music and this perspective, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. I feel like yours is such an interesting journey. And I wonder, do you remember when it hit you that this was going to be the thing you were going to do with your life? Do you remember like an epiphany moment as a kid? Like I'm going to do music. I'm going to play music, share it with the world.
Yeah. I do remember. I definitely when I was, you know, like, I don't know if you ever read like, I'm a big fan of music biographies, musician biographies and stuff. And even, you know, some of the most highbrow music, like the musicians, like a musician like Duke Ellington, if you read his biography, Music Is My Mistress, which is, it's amazing. It's a really cool read. I recommend anybody read it, like whether you're a Duke fan or not, and you should be a Duke Ellington fan because his music's amazing. But anyway, so, but like Duke Ellington, the first reason that I got all into music, it was because like finally girls started to pay attention to me when I played.
Yeah.
And it was really that simple. And I could do it. But you know, I don't come from a musical family. Like no one in my family played music. No one wanted me to play. Like no one, it wasn't like a lot of people I know now that are professional musicians. It was like an expectation. Like they were going to play. And I definitely didn't have that. And so it was like all self-motivated, you know, if I wanted to do it, cause like I found a joy in it. And then, yeah, when I was like 19 or so, or maybe 18 or so. And, I just really decided, like, I was like, yeah, this is it. I'm going to do this and I'm going to give it everything I've got. And yeah, and it is weird. Like my path has been very, like I've had opportunities to work in a lot of different, not obvious contexts and with different people. And that's definitely shaped even, you know, now to do this music, this sort of American Patchwork Quartet thing. That's why I feel like it brings together so many different things from my past that like only, I feel like it so speaks to my strengths. It's something that only I could do in a way, because it's like I had this very weird almost patchwork background playing with all these different kinds of music. Like the first break I ever caught was with a Brazilian percussionist named Ciro Baptista. And he's the first guy who ever like took me out on tour and, you know, played big, you know, big festivals, big concerts. And yeah, it's kind of unreal. And I'm from South Carolina.
So funny. This isn't something I've typically asked everybody over the 300 or whatever episodes I've done of this, but it's been something I think about. Were there alternate paths where you were offered something and you saw how your life could go down this, you know, alternate path, and you chose not to do it, and you look at it now and wonder what it could have been like? I just wonder about that. Do you see that, or are you so in the moment that the blinders keep you from
I mean, I think, yeah, there was never anything that I found that I felt so willing, that I felt so full of energy for. And yeah. I think that's the part of it that is, that I still think about a lot, because I'm sure you know this too and have experienced this, but like to be a musician and to thrive as a musician in 2024, man, you have to adapt, especially to be a DIY, or, you know, maybe it's different if you caught some really big waves in the beginning or something and caught big breaks or had hits or whatever it may be that set a trajectory, and put dollar signs around everything in a way that brought people to help or to or a quote unquote help or profit, you know, from what the work. But you know, when you're all this to say that we have developed a lot of skills, like we've developed, and musicians now, I honor all the musicians out there, man, because we are like a crafty bunch, man. Like we're survivors, and we can do a lot of things, and we have learned to adapt to do all of these skills out of a necessity, right? So I mean, the thing, because of that, like I always think now, like, man, I could do this or I could do that, or I've got these skills now that I see other people maybe working corporate kind of jobs or in other fields. And I'm like, man, like I feel like I could bring a lot to that. Does that make sense?
I totally know what you're saying. Yeah.
But then I know, I catch myself, because I'm always like, you know, I know myself, and I know that I would run out of gas, even if I made a lot more money, you know, like I would run out of gas for it really quick. And then I just wouldn't, then I would actually, more than anything, I would regret the time that I took away from working on doing my work, you know, the thing that I know I want to do. And then it just sort of becomes like, well, I've always mostly felt grateful that I have a sense of that at all. Like, right. That's the big gift of the whole thing. Like if you're an artist pursuing a thing, that you at least know in what that space is that you want to be working in, and because it fuels you and you don't run out of gas for it. You don't run out of energy for it. And if you have that at all, I mean, that's telling you something real special. Yeah. Because a lot of people, don't ever, I guess, experience even that, right?
With the first time that sort of sub question occurred to me was talking to a guy I interviewed named Lang Martin, whose son Tucker produced the newest Old 97s record. He's a producer.
Yeah, I know Portland, Tucker. Yeah, I met him at Grammys a couple of years ago. Cool guy.
Nice. And yeah. He's great. And his dad is like an 80-year-old, wrote a song on the last, he had one of the last songs Elvis ever recorded was he had written. So he's a songwriter. And he had, when I asked him, he had all these opportunities to go into, because he'd bought in early in Nashville, to go into Nashville real estate, and he could have made a ton of money. And as he was saying this, I kept thinking he was going to say, boy, I should have done that. And he didn't. He said, I'm so glad I didn't do that, even though I would have been a rich person had I done that. And so more and more, as I ask people, even though, you know, what you describe, the hustle that is required of us is so sometimes just defeating. Well, I'm putting words in your mouth there,
it's disheartening sometimes, man, you know, because it can be so frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, it can be frustrating because it's not like there's some formula to, you know, make it work better, like, or this works or that doesn't work. I mean, so in the end, you can't pay attention to any of that stuff and you keep doing your work. And the thing that's I didn't mean to cut you off either, but the thing I'm so grateful for that I have to keep, I do have to keep reminding myself this at times, obviously, but I have to remind myself, like, every year of my life, since I decided that this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to put everything I have into it, every single year has been a little bit better.
Nice.
Every year is a little bit better. Nice. It's not like, and then some years were like a whole lot better, you know, like, whoa, this is crazy. This is happening. But like, it's always just, and I just keep going. You just keep going.
That's all we can do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the end of my thing, was that now when I talk to musicians, I always expect them to say, oh, I wish I'd done this other thing. And they always say, I'm so glad I didn't do this thing, even though I would have made a lot more money or it would have been a lot more security or whatever. And it's great. It makes me feel, I really love what I do. And I love, you know, talking to other people that love what they do, but I know that it's fraught. And so I wonder if you, we all have these voices in our head that are, that are negative voices that, I mean, the outside stuff is obvious, you know, the hardships imposed on us by the world and the job and society and commerce and all that. But the interior stuff is what I wonder about. When you come up against those interior voices, the internally generated obstacles, have you figured out a way around them, a way through them? What have you come up with strategy-wise?
Yeah, I mean, that's a million-dollar question right there, and a good one. Like, I'm super anxious. You know, I'm such an anxious person. I think a lot of us are, you know, a lot of us that can persist with this kind of field, like, cause we organize, like, that's what we do. I mean, music in a lot of ways, it's like you're organizing these worlds, you know, if you're writing a song, you're organizing a world. If you're producing a song or, arranging with your bandmates, you know, it's this process of trying to make order out of chaos, you know, and our field is so unpredictable. You don't know. I don't know what my calendar is going to be. Like, I rely on my touring income to support myself and my family. And my partner, God bless her, man. It's like, we've just come to peace with like the, okay, well, we don't really know what the summer's going to look like yet. So we wait and see, and we do our best to plan. And that, like, now with the kids, it becomes increasingly complex because you want to make commitments for what they're going to be able to do and what we plan to do. But, you know, luckily when I get really distraught about that type of thing, and mostly it's around planning, and mostly it's around the instability of just wondering, oh, well, I know something's going to come, but what is it and when is it and how do we plan around it?
Yeah.
I mean, luckily, like, the people in my life that love me and that live with me, they help ground me more than anything else, really, because they say to me, chill out. They say, do you remember last year when you felt the same way? And do you remember what happened? And you said yes to all these things, and then you were too busy. And it, right? I mean, how often have you experienced that?
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I mean, the best is, you know, get a good therapist. Yeah. I definitely do that. I talk to a therapist, that helps me. I meditate, that helps me. I try to eat well and take care of my body. And like, I'm 100% like all about just doing right by myself so that I'm here for the long, long term. And then, man, positive self-talk, man. You know, it's like really believe in yourself, like know that, okay, it's not there yet, but I know it's going to come. And I have every reason to believe that it will continue to come. My wife was telling me she listens to this podcast with like Justin Bateman and those guys.
Yeah,
I don't really listen to it, but we were in this, you know, same thing, same question, you know? And I was like, man, I'm just, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I'm nervous about next year and everything. She's like, I was just listening to the podcast. Jason freaking Bateman, like huge star, you know, he's probably well financially secure at this point, but it's like, they're sitting there saying, yeah, I just think every year, I just think I'm never going to work again.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so funny. It's great to me that the first thing you said was the support of your loved ones believing in you and lifting you up. And it's funny because it's a theme just in this conversation we're having, the collaboration and the power of, you know, coming together.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like in the hardest moments I've had, you know, I had, it was harder even before. Now, at least I have like 20 years of momentum in my favor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now it's kind of like, all right, well, obviously this is what you do. Like you've been doing this for a long time, but in the beginning it's so hard, right? Cause you're like, you're sort of trying to convince the world and the people that love you most that don't understand this field at all, that this is an even viable choice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm so lucky, man. I'm grateful like for my mom, especially cause I remember one time, you know, I was back in living in Charleston, South Carolina. I was in my 20s and I was playing these dive clubs, you know, and getting all bent out of shape when some coked out freaking club manager was like yelling at me because the draw wasn't well good, you know? Yeah. And like I let that bother me. You know what I mean? Like that hurt my feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was like I took it personally, you know, that I didn't have the good draw for the cooked out, you know, club manager. And I'm like telling my mom, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. She's like, man, you need to drop that. You need to forget this guy and you keep going because you've come a long way and this is what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Sweet. Well, so I wonder about that, thinking back to that 20, imagine a 21-year-old Clay in today's world, sadly, 21-year-old you, what advice do you think you would give that kid?
Well, first I'd say buy Facebook stock.
I know.
And then I'd say start a YouTube channel now. And then,
yeah.
No, I don't know. I mean, 21-year-old me. I would just say you just to have faith, man, you know, and I think I did. I must have had it already or I wouldn't have come as far as I've come and be here now talking to you, Rhett. But, you know, definitely I would tell myself to have faith and continue to follow that feeling of the energy, the thing, like I said before, that you, if you have energy and you find that you're passionate about something and you can do that thing and you can do it without concern of like, you know, the income or the other aspects of it, that those things can just happen and you can build something around it, but that you have the energy, you have an endless well of energy to keep showing up for something, that you're on the right track, you know?
Yeah.
I'm grateful that I listened to myself even then, because I've definitely arrived at moments of like when we won the first Grammy you know, I was just like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because it was so much that went into that moment, you know? It wasn't just the 2 years that led up to it. It was like, it felt like a whole lifetime of making choices that were leading to that moment. And so, yeah, I mean, no regrets. No, I would just, yeah, just tell myself to keep going. Give myself a little pat on the back. Don't worry about the cooked out.
club owner. And it's great because once again, it kind of comes back to your intuition, right? You trusted yourself.
And trusting yourself. And knowing yourself, man. You know, that's what we continue to have to do, right? And we have to continue to know ourselves and know what we want, you know, what we want out of anything that we're trying to do. And know how to appreciate it when we get there, you know? I'm so grateful, you know, I'm grateful to be now just in these conversations, you know, meeting with great artists like yourself, you know, being able to share my work with the world and just have conversations around it. It's a gift. So hope to keep showing up.
Man, well, I'm excited. I'm so excited for American Patchwork Quartet. And I just, I think the world of what you're doing and keep it up, man. Good job. Thank you so much for appearing on Wheels Off today.
Oh, thank you, Rhett. It's been a pleasure, my friend. I look forward to listening more. I discovered the podcast and I love it, man. I listened to a bunch of episodes already and can't wait to keep deep diving. It's good stuff.
Thanks. The idea is just like what we would talk about backstage at a gig or a festival. Say we're hanging out for an hour. This is the conversation we would have, probably.
Oh, yeah, man. Totally. Except you would tell me to avoid this club owner or that club owner.
Exactly. All right, man. Thank you. Take care.
All right, brother. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.